Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 43 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, this is a big one. We got Sven Ness. We're talking to Sven Ness, yeah, for about an hour. It's pretty amazing. I'm pretty stoked to get to this, so I'm not going to take too long to talk to you up front, but I do have to let you know a couple things. First off, I have a feeling we're going to get a couple different listeners that haven't been here before, so welcome to Crosshairs Radio. If you like what you hear, this is episode 43. There are 42 others that you can check out as well. Would love for you to do that. Would also love for you to subscribe on iTunes. Rate, review, let us know what you think. If you really like the podcast, go to wideanglepodium.com. Join the podcast network. Tons of other cycling shows on there. Also some music shows. We're branching out into other genres as well. So that's a growing podcast network and one that I think you will dig as well if you like what you hear on this show. Before we get started, I need to thank some sponsors that made it possible for me to get this interview and also just to do the In the Crosshairs tour that we just finished up, where we went to Trek in Madison, Trek CXC Cup, and then down to Vegas for Cross Vegas, and then ending it up in Iowa City for Jingle Cross. Those sponsors, first and foremost, our title sponsor for that trip was Orange Seal, orangeseal.com. Go check out their website. Go try out the sealant that they have to offer. Actually, it's orangesealcycling.com. Got to get that right. orangesealcycling.com. If you haven't tried it before, if you run tubeless or if you run sealant in your tubulars, it's definitely worth checking out Orange Seal. They have a really good product. They have different temperatures, different products for different temperatures. So that's a unique approach to tire sealant. We're going to have some video we shot with those guys up earlier, so also go to cxairs.com and check that out. Along with Orange Seal, also Easton Cycling. Please check out Easton Cycling SDG components. You need to check out those saddles. They are pretty freaking awesome. Feedback Sports, their bike racks, Omnium trainers. They have this sweet new toolkit they just came out with. Go check out Feedback Sports, and also Verge Sport. Verge Sport has been the place that Crosshair Cycling has gotten their kits from day one and all of their attire. We love what they do. We love the clothes that they produce. So definitely, if you have a team or if you're just an individual looking for quality clothes, go to Verge Sport. Squid Bikes also on board, helping us out and making it possible. And last but definitely not least, I want to thank Trek Bikes. Not an official sponsor for that tour, but really the biggest unofficial sponsor you could ask for. They did a ton for me, for my crew, also helped set up this interview with Sven. So a huge thank you to Trek Bikes. Love working with them and hope to do so again in the future. Yeah, and that's about it for sponsors. You know, I have a whole slew of new Skills, Drills, and Belly Aches books in. So if you're looking for that book, the Cyclocross Primer, go to cyclocrossbook.com. Also available on Amazon. Toe spikes. I got toe spikes in stock. If you want toe spikes, go to crosshaircycling.com/shop. You can find those. If you just want to get in touch with me, say hi, go to feedback@cxhairs.com, leave a note, and I will try to get back to you as soon as I can. That's about it. Let's get to Sven Ness. Oh, one note. This is about a 50-minute conversation. About halfway through, we start talking about Kokcida and also the World Championships. And to do that, we're actually looking at clips. And what I've done is I've taken those clips out, actually added a lot more because we stopped and paused it a lot, and put that up as a video companion piece to this podcast. And that will be available through cxhairs.com. So if you go to the post that this podcast is on, you'll see the links. Probably be on YouTube, might also be up on Vimeo. So you can listen to this whole thing, and I think it makes complete sense, especially if you watched Kokcida, if you watch Zolder, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. But it's also cool to go back and you can get a visual and see exactly what we're talking about. So I would recommend listening to this whole podcast, and then if you still want to geek out on this, go and watch the video as well. All right, enough blabbing about that. let's talk to Sven.
Sven, thanks for taking the time to talk.
Thank you.
We are in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I want to thank Trek for making an office available for us to talk in, and also for having you guys out here.
Yeah, I was here. It's my second time I'm here now this year, and for me, it's definitely a special place. In the last 2 or 3 years, during my active career, and now after my career also, we do a lot of development for the sport, for the bikes, and for the team also.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a nice 2-day race, Saturday and Sunday here. Where we can show the European riders also what cyclocross is, and I'd love to be here.
Yeah. So, looking at social media that you have out here, and just sort of sitting here today, I'm not sure if you're either the best or the worst at retirement. You look like you're fit. Looks like you could race tomorrow.
I don't know. I'm definitely 20-25% worse than I was during my career, but that's normal. I don't have so many time to ride my bike 3, 4, 5 hours a day, but I try to do my best. 5-6 days out of 7, I try to do some sports, some running or some cycling, and I want to do that. I want to stay healthy. I want to keep my skills and to learn the young riders or people from other companies what cyclocross is.
And yeah, did you sort of look at maybe other professional cyclists who moved over to management and sort of see how they completely quit and use that as a guide in some way?
Yeah, also I saw a few guys who don't do it really well after their careers. I learned a lesson there, but it's also what I would do normal. That's my way of living. I try to stay healthy as long as possible. And I can't coaching a team if I'm not healthy by myself, eat different than the riders. I try to do my best and try to give all my experience to them, and I can't do that when I'm not healthy. So that's also a very important reason.
How exciting has that been? I'm sure that on your team, it was mainly just you and Sven, and you have all of this knowledge, and you were an extremely analytical rider and had all, wanted to improve every aspect. How exciting has it been now to be able to share all that with your own team and to be able to teach?
Yeah, that's really nice to do. It's not easy. That's what I want to say first, because that are all different characters, all different talents. They try to do it on their own way, and I want to coach them. I want to help them improve their own capacities. But it's not possible let them all do what I done before, and it's also not necessary. I want to try that the riders are at their best level. They not need to be a Sven S again. They need to be the best Tom Meuse and the best Quinten Hermans. That's what I want to do. And I try to organize a lot on a high level with my coaches, with the companies I work with. That's my main goal. And they are having their own coaches also, mm-hmm. Where they work with at home. So I try to make a good mix of a lot of information and help them to create a higher level.
So what is that breakdown? So you have somebody who has their own coach who I'm assuming is more getting them in shape, getting them fit.
Yeah.
And then what you add to that? It looks like maybe you're adding more just strategy analysis, even technique maybe?
Yeah, a bit of technique, a bit of strategy, and a lot of a way of living. Cycling on a high level, on the best level, is not a thing that you do 2 or 3 months. It's a thing that you do a whole year, 365 days in a year. Do your best with your food, with your rest, with your recovery, your training, and you see that they can improve a lot there. So I'm there, I'm riding with them, and I can talk with them about how they doing a training, if they are doing a training and they don't have structure, they just train, they just ride their bikes. When I start my training, I know what I need to do. I know every schedule, I know every heartbeat, every power outcome, and that's necessary. I know what the weather is going to be, that I'm going to train in the morning because it's raining in the afternoon, structure. And that's what I need to learn, because I saw that they made a lot of mistakes before. And maybe they can improve a lot there, and it's going to help them don't have negative stress before a race. Everything is settled, everything is arranged, and then they are free in their minds to race on their own best capacity. That's what I want to do.
So just getting to the start line, knowing that everything's taken care of and all they have to do is race.
But they need to do it.
Right.
They need to do all the action. I can't do it for him. And that's their own experience, their own power that they need to use. But I only can help them. And I do my best, and I feel that I have a lot of good input from the riders, that they like it. So it's nice working with them.
So big signing for you and for the team, bringing Lars van der Haar over starting in January is, and it seems like you guys had been friendly throughout the years. Is he a guy that maybe you looked at what he was doing? Like he always seems like he has the fitness, super strong rider. Do you see things maybe with the way he races that you could work with him on?
Yeah, it's a guy who I really love working with. I saw that during my entire career, that when we're talking together, we have the same interests. I feel that he has a lot of knowledge about training on a science way. I feel that he has a lot of information from his own capacities, and he wants to improve that. And together with my own coach, Paul van den Bos, we can work with him and try to give him a little bit more confidence, a little bit more power, because he's close. He was second at the World Championships. He was in Louisville when he was a bit younger, also on the podium. So he has the capacities to be a leader of the team, and I try to help him. But I felt before that was the guy where I want to work with. But it's not that the guys who are now in the team that I don't like them. They are very nice to work with, but we need to have one guy who was before on the podium on World Championships, National Championships, and that was the guy who I loved to work with.
Yeah, and it seemed, you know, just from hearing what he was saying, was he didn't want to go to a team that he couldn't be in that position, that he was at least going to be treated as a leader of a team.
Lars misses a really cyclocross family.
Right.
He's now in a Pro Tour team where he needs to solve everything by his own. Okay, he has a little bit knowledge from the team, but for him it's important that we can do training camps together with other cyclocross riders. He can improve a lot there. He can learn a lot from other riders also, and if we can bring that together, it's going to help the team, but it's going to help Lars also. He misses the cyclocross family during the summer season.
Right, it's almost that culture that he hasn't, that he's missed out on. Do you think also possibly getting him on a new bike is going to improve in any way, or do you think at that level he can
I think so. That's what I try to do is bring him over here, let him know the company, and it's going to give him, that's what I feel also with the other riders now. It's the first time that they are here, and they feel that there's a lot of passion inside the company, and they want to work on the details, and if they see it for the bikes, they want to improve by their own also and work on the details. So when that come together, you can make a better performance, and that's what I want to do also with Lars and I think he's really excited to work with Trek also.
So I saw you made a couple comments about this, but just, you know, in the U.S. we all look at Belgium as pretty much the motherland of cyclocross. That's where the greatest riders are. That's where all the huge races are. And I think it's great that, you know, your team's coming over here and sort of seeing how the U.S. does cyclocross, where it's more of a participatory, you know, sport. Like the way I always explain it to people, we look at Belgium, we're like, those are the superheroes. Those are the guys that we can watch on TV, but then maybe
Don't do that.
No, but then the Belgian fans aren't, you know, racing as much here. We're all racing.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's a different culture. Yeah, it's a totally different culture.
But in the US, is a lot of capacity of young riders who learn now cyclocross for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And if we come over here, and that's what I want to do for the last 2, 3, 4 years, and it helps a lot. I see that there is more and more interest for cyclocross, and I think it's the biggest growing discipline in cycling in the US. And I know what the problem is with mountain bike, because when you want to do a mountain bike on an Olympic discipline, for a normal rider who goes to work every day, it's almost impossible.
Right.
The skills are too difficult. And if you jump on a cyclocross bike and you do a course from a World Cup, it's possible for everybody. And you can learn in 1 hour a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Show the lines, shifting, jump off and on the bike, and you can learn a lot. And that's what people like a lot. It's not so dangerous, but it's fun to do. And I think that's also a big reason why cyclocross is going to grow a lot here in the US. But we, as the international riders, we need to believe that, and we need to invest and come over and support the US. And that's what I'm doing now, and I feel a lot of respect from everybody. And I hope I can come more and more, because that's what my main goals is now. Create the same level in the US than what we see in Europe.
Yeah, and I remember when we talked last year, you had some frustration that some of the other riders didn't believe that and weren't showing up for the, you know, that Tuesday night event in Vegas.
I don't know if you saw the interview.
Oh, I did. Mathieu van der Poel. Yeah, absolutely.
I almost fall off my chair. And then you have the reaction of the UCI leader, Coxon.
Mm-hmm.
He gave a reaction that it's not true and that there is a lot of potential over here. And it's true. You need to believe in it, you need to invest in it, and it helps the rider by themselves also.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, just having a lot of friends who are riders in the US who go over and do World Cups and try to, you know, get into some of the series in Belgium, that when they heard Matthew talking about how it was too expensive for him to come over, and these U.S. riders are like, welcome to our world, because that's what we do every time we go to...
Of course, you need to have respect for that.
Yeah.
You need to do one investment in a year to come over
and
to promote our sport. They earn a lot of money, so it's not impossible.
Yeah, yeah. And that compared to, you know, it's still a growing sport here. There's not a lot of money. You know,
that's true.
The rider salaries aren't...
You need to start somewhere.
Right. Yeah. So I guess the follow-up to that then is, what do you do if you are a young U.S. rider? What do you need to do to be able to make it in the sport at the top level? Do you need to live in Europe? Do you need to, or can you do it?
Before, it was necessary, I think. But not now anymore. You see in different states that they doing cyclocross. I saw in Chicago they have 11 races during the winter season in the neighborhood of Chicago. You can learn a lot during that races. You almost can see every weekend the streams of cyclocross in Europe. You can learn a lot, and if your development is and your passion is there, you can grow and on a certain moment, you're going to feel that your level is high enough to participate in World Cups. And I hope that, and that's maybe the biggest step, that there is going to be a lot of money going to the federation here in the US. That's necessary to invest and to bring the young riders over to Europe and to let them learn. You need to have a coach that's only... doing that work, bringing the young riders over, and that's gonna help. And it's possible. You saw you saw it with Jeremy Powers, Trabon, all riders who did it really well. And if you see how many potential we have now, there is more potential than more young riders, more families come to cyclocross. So I'm definitely aware of that, that we have new talents over here.
Sure.
But they need to be motivated. Yeah. They need to invest in their sports.
I think it is, you know, the money is definitely a part of it. The thing that I think a lot of people always come back to as well is that the courses in the U.S. have to be set up for every level. So you're not getting, you know, features like you're getting at, like, say, a Valkenburg or something like that, where you wouldn't have amateur racers on there. And there, that's what we're struggling with as well, making these sections like we'll have out here for, you know, the pro-only sections and trying to...
Okay, but it's possible to make a course like this and only for the pros doing the difficult sections. All the other riders can ride on the other sections. And I think the level of the amateurs is going to grow also. Mm-hmm. And then it's possible to ride all the courses. It's nothing extreme. And it's also not a problem when a section is too difficult that you are running. That's also part of cyclocross. So we also not only riding a downhill. Sometimes mm-hmm. if it's too difficult, we also run sometimes. So that's cyclocross. And
right.
I think the scene, all the people here in the US gonna ask for more special courses, looks like the European courses,
right,
because they want to learn that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. You know, going back to, it reminded me about the course, going back to watching you at that clinic yesterday, some of the things that I enjoyed that you were teaching is that, and what I like is that with your technique, you look at it, and I think there are things that you've probably changed over the year, like how you carry a bike, elbow out or elbow in, and even the shouldering. That's why I posted that on Instagram. The shouldering thing was great, because I know that for years you're going around the top tube, now it's underneath. And that's why I think, you know, other than your ability to win and being strong and having the power for it, I think that's what sort of set you apart, is that you're really able to look at these things and not be afraid or set in your ways and able to change.
That's true. You need to develop. You need to change, to be ready to change different things. Bikes are changing. Your body is changing. And you need to find the way where you can save some energy. And by waiting as long as possible to jump off the bike before barriers, that's the reason why you can save some energy. It's about carry your bike in the middle of your shoulder or the weight balance. And I always think about that kind of stuff to improve myself, other riders. That's what I like about cyclocross.
Right. I'll be given a hard time if I then don't follow up with the question, because it, for whatever reason, it seems to be a huge debate, the brakes, the cantilevers versus the disc brakes.
Yeah, for me it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now Scott here at Trek, he built me a cantilever bike. But for me, now he sent me a new bike with discs.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter for me, actually.
Yeah.
I raced a lot of races in my last year with disc brakes. I won my last World Cup with disc brakes. I love to ride with disc brakes. It's a little bit the weight.
Mm-hmm.
That's normal. I feel that. A little bit the acceleration. But there are a lot of things that are better with disc brakes, and you have more control over the bike. So from now until the next 2-3 years, nobody's going to ride cantis
right.
anymore.
Well, I noticed in the race that just happened, it was, Van Aert switched over to disc, was racing them. You had the one that was interesting, even Kevin Powell's was in there, you know, and you had, it was like the top five at some point. There weren't any more cantilever brakes out there.
So I think now 80% of the top 20 is going to ride disc brakes.
Yeah.
And it's normal, it's more safe, it's improving a lot. And for sure, in the next few years, nobody's going to build cyclocross bike with cantis
right.
anymore.
Right.
For me, it's not... I don't like disc brakes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I see the question a lot.
I know you do. I know you do. And that's why I wanted to get it out there one more time. Before we get into looking at a couple race clips, you had a post of your son's race from about a week ago.
Yeah.
And what I enjoyed was your comment was not results, but just his love of the sport.
Yeah.
We've seen this before with dads who are the best at what they do in sport, and then the sons having to deal with that. You know, think about like Axel Merckx, who had a wonderful career and still is doing great things in cycling, but was never going to live up to his dad. Do you have any fears like that, or what is your...
No, I don't have fears for that. I feel that my son loves what he's doing right now. I don't push him. He asks himself to race. There is no pressure. And if he say tomorrow, I don't like cycling anymore, I want to play football, for me, it's okay. If I see that my son is happy, he is he's healthy, that's more than enough. And for the moment, he's now 13 years old. He's getting 14 in November. Results are not necessary. I want to see that he has fun, that he that he's improving his skills, because that's what I like a lot, that he sees other lines than other riders. For me, that's more a victory than winning a race. And what he's doing afterwards, we'll see. If he's getting a professional rider or not, doesn't matter for me. But he's happy. He's asking me a lot about cycling, and we have the same passion. And as a dad, that's really nice.
It must have been great races you were able, when you were pre-riding the course, to have him out there and ride along.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that was fun to watch. All right, let's take a look at a couple races here. First off, just I say Coxsida, is that correct?
Yeah, Coxsida.
Okay, Coxsida. All right. So World Cup coming into the season. First off, you know, you're talking before about diminishing returns just from getting older and that kind of stuff, not having the power you maybe used to have. Did you find that, I'm assuming, was frustrating a little bit, but also having these younger riders out there, did that create a new challenge for you? I mean, was that enjoyable in any way?
It created definitely a new challenge. But I felt that I need to ride on another, how you say it, another... It's difficult to say.
Yeah.
On another level is not the right word. I need to fill in the race completely different. That's
right.
What I want to say.
So the things that maybe
I'm not so explosive anymore.
Right. So you had to find a new ways to get those results that you're getting.
So, and it's always finding a solution. When you start, when do I have my best capacity? And at the end of my career, sometimes it was like 20 minutes after the start that I felt that I started a little bit more in my normal way of riding.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to live with that. And it's not so easy, because I was a rider who was really explosive, directly in a good position, and now I need to come back.
Right.
And with the young guys, it's not so easy.
Right, yeah. So for this race, Coxsida looks completely different last year than it has in the past. When you saw that, when you don't have file treads on your bike, you know, and you're having a more aggressive tire because it's muddy out, is that, I know that you've always said you want the courses as hard as possible. Is that something when you saw that happening that excited you? Was that thing that you thought was in your favor?
Definitely, because it slows the race a little bit down. It was not only the sand pits, but it was before and after the sand pits, it was muddy. So you need to have grip, you need to have power over there also, and it slows the race really, really down. And that helped me, because otherwise, when you come out of the sand pit and they're riding in a group and you are not starting really well, it's difficult to jump from group to group. And now they need to have power during the entire lap. And that helped me to create my own level and build it up and come back to the front, and feel that I have a good balance on the bike and save some energy in coming into the sand pit And at the end of the race, when you have experience enough and you saved enough energy, my power came back.
Yeah.
And I felt that the youngest getting nervous, Wout van Aert, I won also the day before.
Sure,
He didn't race
right.
before. But for me, it was maybe physically hard. But for him, it was mentally, because he was thinking, oh, and he raced already yesterday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that helped me to win that race.
Yeah.
And then on a certain moment, he had a flat tire.
Yeah.
And he came under pressure. But normally, when with his strength now, he come back directly. But
right.
I felt that we were really close together. It was one mistake can make the difference. And that cost him a lot of energy. And I had him where I want to have him. And on a certain point, I felt that I could play with him
sure.
in the last two laps. And he was nervous in the last lap because he wanted to do something special and ride away from me. But I was trying to stay relaxed, and I knew the only thing I need to do is follow him until the last sandpit, and then I'm gonna use my power for one more time. And it's worked out like I want.
So yeah, but here's a question for you, and something that I think that younger riders deal with. This is normally not where we expect to see you.
No.
At the beginning of the race.
That's my age. That's only my age. That's not normal, and that's not where I want to
right.
be.
So you're like between 10 and 15 back. You know, normally through your career, we see you between, it seems like you really like that between third and fifth
yeah.
was where you were happy,
yeah.
happy being.
Everything so, under control, and here I don't have everything under control because after the first sand pit, a lot of riders jump off the bike too early. I need to run also.
Yeah.
And then I need to use my experience and wait. Don't try to pass them in the sand pit, but wait. If they came out of the sand pit, then there is a possibility to accelerate. That costs you less energy.
Mm-hmm.
And there I need to use my experience. If I'm too nervous, it's not possible to win that race.
So when we're... What's happening at the front of this race, which I thought was interesting as well, and this is just another showing through the sand where, again, everybody's dismounting, so you're getting stuck back there. But it seemed like with Vanderpool being back for the first time that Van Aert really, it seemed like those two were sort of looking at each other, and maybe they even burned some matches just in a little bit of a slugfest, you know, just going after each other in those first couple laps. It seemed like they were going pretty hard.
It's really true. And that's what I always said in the beginning of last season, and it's going to be the same this year. Mathieu wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
He was injured. He was not racing. And Wout was on a really high level. And this pushes him to a higher level than on his almost limit. He must go over the limit. So he needed to recover from that. And that helps me a lot. But in the beginning of the first season, last season, he didn't need to do that. Mathieu wasn't there. His level was that high that he can do what he wants to do
right.
During the first half race. But now he...
Because he's another guy, sort of like you, who likes to see what's going on in a race, would hang back a little bit in the first laps and not really make his move until he knew what everybody was doing. Vanderpool gets out there and just blows that up because he's
true.
Just going to go.
And that cost him now a lot of energy, and I'm still on my normal heart rate.
Right.
Don't panic. Let him do. I have my experience, and on a certain point, if I'm strong enough, I come back.
Is so in similar to this was a guy like Stibar sort of like
Mathieu.
That for you?
Yeah,
where
absolutely.
he sort of took you out of that game plan when he was in races.
Absolutely. And sometimes another guy won then the race.
Yeah.
It's true. It's Mathieu is a rider who tried to push it to the limit. That cost also about a lot of energy. And then on a certain point, they need to recover. And that's the moment you can come back and don't lose a lot of energy because the race is going to be a little bit slower
right.
on that point.
So here we're to this mud section, still a couple laps in, and you're starting to move up. At this point, you know, you said you're at your normal heart rate. Is that it? You feel like you've recovered from that start, and now you can just...
Yeah, and always seeing that they are not that the gap is not that far. I'm not on the limit, and I feel that if I do one jump, I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to do the jump because I want to do the jump in the last lap.
Right. So this was, I don't know how, you know, this was an interesting move right here, just because it was almost like you could foretell the future, you know, because you made that pass on Lars to get into third place. And then moments later, we come around that bend, you're through safely, and there's a crash right behind.
I know that there is going to happen something because the pressure is building up. The speed is going up. You see that Wout is doing his move, and I'm there. Mathieu has a little bit of problems because it's the first race he's doing again.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have the right lines, if I have good mentally the strength, it's possible. And here I know I can win the race.
Yeah, so we're just looking at Van Aert taking a little peek back at you. There's a gap now to the rest of the race. So, So that that was the point. That was the point where you
for
knew.
Me, that's the point. Okay, this is a day that I can win.
Yeah,
everything needs to be perfect.
Right,
but it's possible today.
Do you think winning that race, even though you had exerted yourself, you know, had to put in a winning effort the day before, do you think winning that race helped you mentally the day before coming into this?
Yeah, because I was close races before, mm-hmm. In Las Vegas, for example, the first World Cup. The gap was not so big between me and Wout. Okay, I'm the oldest, and it's not so easy to do the start like the young guys are doing. But I was on my maximum level, and I knew that it was possible. And if you can win the day before, then there happening something in your mind that you are, yeah, it's free. You feel yourself more free. And definitely here I come back to Wout, but he didn't race the day before. For me, it's mentally very positive, and for him, it's mentally very negative.
This is it. Now you're given a look back. you're in front. I guess what you were saying before, the strategy there is just to stay steady.
Stay steady. The riders can come back. Mathieu can come back. For me, it's no problem anymore. I'm ready to have a big battle at mm-hmm. that certain point. And he can push now, but there are sand pits. There are a lot of skills during the race. With one move, it's possible to close the gap directly again.
Right.
And that's what I'm feeling. I'm in a situation that I have everything under control.
This was an interesting one. This ride that I looked at a lot that, you know, I'll just play it through for you, this hill. You were dismounting much earlier.
Yeah.
And it seems like, at least in this one, it was rideable and every once in a while, but here you definitely took the opportunity to...
Save energy.
Save, and you closed the gap.
Yeah.
I mean, you made up 2 seconds on him. He had like a 2-second gap right there.
If you see how long he needs to push to come up the small hill over here, that cost him a lot of energy.
Right, and he's going much farther.
Much farther also. Yeah. And for me, it's during the running helped me a lot to save really, really much energy on that point. And if he's doing that 3-4 times, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I'm going to skip ahead here just to the end, but those last couple laps, probably, for me, some of the most exciting racing I've seen in the past 10 years at least. I mean, that was just one of the all-time great cyclocross races. When we get to this mud section, you know, we're going through these last final turns. This is when you said that's, and you can see it, this is just, you're laying it all out there. It's just pretty much all out power at this point, right? I mean, we're to the last couple turns of the race.
And the last turn, or the second last turn, is for me really important.
Because you want to be first onto the tarmac, right?
Yeah, definitely. But here I'm still behind Wout, and choosing the right line over here, coming inside.
right
next to him, and then it's yeah, it's full power.
Yeah, no, that was a beautiful move, taking that inside line, and probably a little strategical mistake on his part by not being over there and cutting that off.
But also the mistake he made over there, the reason is that he pushes a lot in the last sand pit sections, and that cost him so much energy that his last power move doesn't work out like he wants to. And I felt that I have a little bit more space over there. And that's the reason why I could win the race.
Come down to this final stretch. I mean, if you're a movie maker, cinematically, you can't, you really can't get this much better. You know, you're on one side, he's on the other, and it's pretty much just mano a mano and go as hard as you can.
Power come out of my back.
Yeah.
A lot of grip, big gear, and you feel he'll hear that he is losing the grip. And there is creating a small gap.
And at that point, you knew it, right?
At that point, I knew it. And definitely when I come on the tarmac and the first three, four, five steps I'm doing, there's creating a lot of explosivity. And that helped me a lot. But for me here, the race season was over. This was the end of my career.
Sure.
The only thing I think mentally for me here, I won my last day of my career. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
And the only thing I've done afterwards was trying to do my best, but it was not anymore on the same level. That was the day against the strongest rider of the moment. Nothing can go higher than that moment.
Yeah. No, that's what it felt like. Yeah, absolutely.
Mentally, also.
Yeah. Just watching it, it looked like you had this goal for the season,
yeah.
and to sort of have that monument to go out on.
Absolutely.
We're going to skip ahead to the World Championship race. And it's really, and again, you know, when we were out here yesterday at the clinic, this is when you were showing that line back in the woods that everybody, there's this burnt in line that everybody's riding. You're like, look, you can take this 6 feet wide or go around this tree, and then you come into the turn, right? It reminded me exactly of this because we're at Zolder. Everyone rides down the middle in this wooded section. You're the only guy over here riding on the side. Is this day of? Had you planned on this? Was this a line that you knew of?
Yeah, I tested that before. I need to feel the underground, and we come down from a small hill, and I need to turn. And if I make the turn too sharp, it can cost me a lot of speed. So I make the turn really wide, and stay over there where not so many riders are riding. So the underground is harder. So I can hold my speed much longer. That's the reason why I want to race.
Yeah, and it moved you up, you know, three spots there. And the thing that I enjoyed even more about you doing that in this race is that, do you know what? This is looking at that same section, the next lap, and do you know?
Of course.
So we're looking at it, and everybody is taking your line now. Probably something that happened throughout your career.
Yeah, and it happens still now after my career. I am a rider that wants to be fit after his career. I can tell you that from now on until the next 10 years, a lot of riders who is going to stop, going to do the same. Going to sport again,
yeah.
Going to be fit again. Because there is a lot of copying that happened during my entire career, and now it's going to start also after my career. I know that for sure.
Yeah, well, that's good. It means you're doing something right. I know you've seen this clip on TV. This is with Mathieu getting it wrong and then getting the whole thing with the foot in the wheel.
Here I have really bad luck.
Yeah.
I just changed my bike, and I'm the last one. I'm the last one of the group. Otherwise, it was maybe possible that I was in the front with Lars van der Aar.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Because
he
on
got
that
away
moment,
there.
I felt myself really strong.
Mm.
And
yeah.
The gap created because of the mistake from
right.
Mathieu. And everybody's copying Matthew.
Sure, right.
But there is possibility to open a gap and to.
Yeah, and he even got in trouble here a couple laps before because he's drifting out and he knocked his wheel into that fence post. But how do you think these guys handle this? I mean, when this happens, you know, you've been in situations like this before. These are some young guys.
If you see it, and now if the riders are seeing it, they're going to say how stupid I am. But that's a reaction you need to have directly in a split of a second.
Another one, just giving your thoughts again, these are other riders, but just some stuff that happened in here. Now a rider you're working with, Lars, when you saw the highlights of this, what are you thinking about making the pass on this hill?
I would never do that. If I am in the position of Wout van Aert, I would let him do.
Mm.
And I would accelerate just before you start to run on the climb, because this cost him a lot of energy. Try to pass him again and pass him again. Let him do.
Yeah, because then he came into that run-up, and yeah, that's where it sort of fell apart. But here you are coming back. Really, again, you know, we saw the Kokesider race that you won, but this must have been nice too as well, just sort of a final world championship race.
For me, this is sometimes when during my entire career, you are frustrated that you don't won more world championships, or that you 1 week later you can win again with more than half a minute, or you won a lot of World Cups and all the GCs, and then on a certain moment you are frustrated. And the only thing I always thought was, okay, at the end of my career, we're going to see who is the winner. And if you see how I created my own end of my career, on which level, with how many respect from my from the other riders, from the people, from the press, from everybody, then everything came together. And I felt, okay, all the frustration, now this is how I handle that. I want to have a longer career on a really high level. And at the end of my career, I feel that I'm the winner against all the other riders. Not only the riders, but the different age categories. Because I raced against the father of Mathieu van der Poel at the end to Mathieu. And I dreamed of stopping on the way it happened, and for me that was really emotional. That's the first time I really was emotional and felt that I've done everything right.
Outstanding. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, and good luck to your team this coming weekend.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
So there it is, the Svencast on Crosshairs Radio. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Once again, I want to thank the sponsors that made that possible. Orange Seal, first and foremost, orangesealcycling.com, and then Easton Cycling, SDG Components, Feedback Sports, Verge Sport, Squid Bikes, and Trek Bikes. feedback@cxhairs.com. Let me know what you thought about this interview. Don't forget about the video companion. You can get that at cxhairs.com. And we are going to be back really soon with another They Don't Do That in Europe. Until that time, have fun racing your bike, or even just riding it, or watching other people ride bikes, if that's what you do. I just talked to Sven. That was really cool.